Hello and welcome to The Breakdown, the RTE Rugby Podcast. I'm Michael Corcoran. This week has been a heartbreaking one for all associated with rugby. The unexpected death of Munster head coach and former player Anthony Foley has united even the fiercest of rivals in grief. Very shortly we'll be hearing the thoughts of the rugby correspondent of the Telegraph newspaper Mick Cleary. We'll also be chatting to the Ireland Women's International Paula Fitzpatrick. Well, Munster's game against Racing 92 was postponed last Sunday because of Anthony's death. However, Leinster got their campaign off to a good start against Cast at the RDS.
Charging forward and they touch it down across on that far side of the pitch. That was really good work. The ball taken a sort of almost Leo Cullen style in the centre of the line out there. Leinster down low, driving Castor back and eventually piling them in over the line across on that far side. I think it's Sean Cronin who's got in for the try. 8.5 minutes gone, Leinster by 5 points to 0. Castor not committing initially, but Leinster now certainly committing here with a full-blooded effort. Castor now driven back to within 8 or 9 metres of their own line, and Leinster drive forward now with Sean Cronin, gets around another man. Sean Cronin gets swivels for the line. Sean Cronin with the second try for Leinster, and that has come, well, certainly from another rolling maul. 26 minutes gone, and the referee completely unsighted. I mean, it's poor positional play from the referee, but a Sean Cronin who pirouetted there as if he was on dancing on ice or something like that, and got in for the try. Leinster by 2 tries to 0. 26 minutes gone, 10 points to nil on the scoreboard. And they go forward with this one. Leinster pile in to try and gather that one. And they've eventually got the try on this near side of the pitch. So 3 lineouts and 3 lineout mauls for Leinster. And it looks as if it is the 100 cap man Jack McGraw who's got the try for Leinster. Sean Cronin with the first two. He was prominent as they drove them forward. But it's Jack McGraw who's got the touchdown. Leinster with their third try. And we still have 7 minutes remaining in the first half of this one. Brees Mack takes that one. And Castor have control of it now as they try and put pressure on Leinster. And Leinster under pressure now. 5 metres short of their own line, 5 in for the touchline. On the near side of the pitch, they got forward momentum. Castor, that is, they certainly collapse over the line. And again, well, the referee has given a penalty try. I was about to say his positioning was absolutely shocking for the second one in a row, but the referee has given a penalty try. And he's reached into his hand. Was he taking out a yellow card there on that occasion? Well, the referee is now reaching in. He's given a yellow card to Luke McGrath, of all fellas, and the referee given a penalty try.
Well, Luke McGrath looked like, as the man was heading over the line, which there is no offside on the line, he hugged the man and the ball, so the ball couldn't be put on the ground, which the ref has deemed that that's a yellow card offence, penalty try.
It's I suppose the referee would probably say that they were in the act of scoring the try. They certainly had driven Leinster back there. Defensively, Leinster were under the pump there on that occasion, but
but technically, when you go over the line, there's no offside.
That's exactly the point, yeah.
You can do whatever you want, you know, within the laws,
yeah,
to the opposition player going over.
Well, the penalty try has been given. Moves it out now towards Gary Ringrose. Slipped as he tried to attack the Castro defence there with that one. But it's now taken by Jack McGrath. He's got one try already. And now taken by Eason Atewa. Breaks free inside the 22. Eason Atewa pins his ears back. Stumbles for the line. Eason Atewa touches it down. It's a bonus point try for Leinster. With 14 on the pitch, Eason took on the responsibility. Gathered that ball after a surge from Jack McGrath. And it was Eason Atewa who danced through the cover inside the 22-metre line. Leinster have the bonus point. And it has come 7.5 minutes gone in the second half of this game. Jemison Gibson Park feeds that one in. Leinster now driving Castor backwards. That's a much, much better scrum for Leinster. Jemison Gibson Park gathers that. And the referee has now lost patience with Castor. And he's gone under the post as Jemison Gibson Park had actually got his hands on the ball. But it's quite decisive, I'll tell you what, Matthew Carley. That's a penalty try for Leinster. Castor trying to smuggle this ball towards the line. James Tracy inside there, preventing the Castor forward come forward with that one. Eventually, James Tracy inside, but Castor still in possession. About a foot short of the Leinster line. And again, it's a reaching movement forward here. And have they touched it down? Matthew Carley raises his hands aloft, raises his arm aloft, and it does look as if Castor have actually got in for a try.
Yeah, delighted would win bonus point as well. You know, it's a nice way to start the campaign. You know, certainly better than it was this time last year. So, Yeah, the game was, you know, a pleasing overall outcome, but probably a little bit frustrated with some of the things that actually went on in the game. But yeah, it's nice, I suppose, that there's a few areas that we can look to improve upon.
The captain, Muldoon, it was who fell on it. Marmion again, out to Carter, the miss move. O'Halloran, it's a 2-on-1. O'Halloran, can he get there? Yes, he can. Here's Adeoluken, Carter, Ronaldson, Marmion again, Bundiaki, drifting through Aki, he coasts through.
When you've got a home tie to begin with, it's important that you win your home games. Obviously, at times it was high octane stuff, and we tried to move them around. Geez, they're a huge pack, and we knew that. Obviously, they've got a lot of history, and three or four times champions of this competition. We knew that they'd come over here, and they'd try and I suppose beat us up front, and we tried to stay away from that, for the want of a better word. We knew their strength was their scrum and maul, but look. The idea of our game plan was, if they're big and they're stronger, try and move them around and try and get them off their feet. So, yeah, look, delighted with the win.
A fully deserved win for Leinster, scoring 5 tries against Cast. A win also for Connacht, who are certainly getting back to their best, but a disappointing defeat for Ulster away to Bordeaux Beglay. As mentioned previously, the untimely death of Anthony Foley cast a long shadow over the rugby world this week. Players, former colleagues and coaches all paid their tributes to the Munster Heineken Cup winning captain. Amongst them was the Leinster scrum half, Luke McGrath.
You know, it took everyone by shock there at the weekend, just hearing the news. And, you know, I personally didn't know Anthony, but I grew up watching him as a young boy, going to Lands End Road, watching him games. And I was actually at the 2006 Heineken Cup final. So he's a legend of Munster and Irish rugby, and he'll be sorely missed by everyone.
I know that quite a lot of your colleagues would have had sort of stronger ties with him. I mean, it has affected everybody.
Yeah, it has affected everyone, you know. I think it's almost really hard to believe, you know, everyone's still in shock from it. And I suppose all we can do now is just pay their respects to Munster, the players and management, and they need the support in this tough time.
Does it really kind of hit home? You're a young man yourself.
Yeah.
He was a young man.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it just takes everything into perspective. You know, obviously we're all here loving rugby, but there's so much more in life. You know what I mean? Especially when he has two young kids. So it's a very sad day for the rugby community as a whole, and just, you know, deepest sympathies to the family and the Munster players and management.
In terms of a game this weekend, you've got Montpellier at the end of it. I mean, you know, you'd have been pleased with last Saturday, the performance, maybe not conceding a couple of the tries,
yeah.
But you know that's obviously a good work on if I can use a horrible coaching
press.
Yeah,
exactly. No, I think, like, even from last year, we were so disappointed in Europe, so we focused on the first game as being a massive one. Obviously, getting the 5 points was brilliant against a tough Cast team, but, you know, if we're honest with ourselves, you know, there was times when they're letting in those tries, as you say, and obviously myself and the sim binning wasn't meant to go to plan, obviously, but, you know, it's a great start for us, and we know Montpellier will be a bit disappointed and not getting the, just narrowly losing in Northampton, so they'll be up for this one, and so will we be.
It's a huge game, isn't it? Going to take them on in their own back garden.
Yeah, massive game. One that everyone's looking forward to, and know that you know, we're going to have to play some of our best rugby this season to, if we want to get the results. So big day, big training week ahead.
I know that there's huge competition for places in the starting team. You know, Johnny Sexton ruled out last week. Joey Carberry, I mean, obviously the early games you've played so far with him this year, we saw the benefit of that last Saturday.
Yeah, he's been brilliant. You know, he's very young. I think he's only about 21 or nearly 22 now, but, you know, he's been brilliant so far, just getting that experience in the earlier games, and he just shone through at the weekend. He was obviously excellent, and it was hopefully, you know, it'll be good competition between. I'm sure if Johnny gets back for this week, I think he's looking good, but it's great competition to have Joey just slot in like that, and he was excellent at the weekend.
Luke, you're up to 6 appearances, I think it is, already this season. How yeah. Is it to get that run under your belt?
Yeah, it's brilliant. You know, I'm delighted to get the game time. I'm getting more comfortable, up to speed with kind of things, starting that more as that game time comes. And obviously, I know myself, I've still a lot to work on. You know, still kind of a young kind of player coming in, and a little bit of, I haven't had that many games at the European level. I think that was only my third at the weekend there, so I'm still kind of getting into it. But like you say, I'm enjoying every minute of it.
we're swapping this week for a team that's 10th in the top 14 for a team that's 3rd.
Yeah.
What differences do you see between Cast and Montpellier?
Like Montpellier are very physical. Like Cast are physical side, but Montpellier are massive. You know, they have a great coach in Jake White. You know, international standard all over the pitch. And Nick White at 9, who I watched as well, kind of grown up a little bit, but he's brilliant as well. So it's an exciting challenge for us, and we know we have to play our best if we want to get the results.
What's it like playing a French team in France?
It's very difficult, you know. I think one of the main kind of focus over there is discipline. You know, we don't want to give the crowd gets on top of their team. It's very loud, you know. So discipline's going to be a massive focus for us this week, especially when Francois Stein kicks them from nearly 60 meters. You know, so. That's going to be a massive focus, but it's just an intense atmosphere and we've all got to be ready for it.
There's talks that Tomás O'Leary might head over there.
Yeah.
He's so stuck with scrum halves, but they had a wallaby on the pitch last week against Northampton.
Yeah, it's obviously, you know, they have a massive squad. They seem to have international level all throughout their team, so it's going to be a tough ask.
Luke, remember back in the last season when you knew that Owen Redden and as a boss were going to retire, you kind of, how much emphasis did you place during pre-season then to kind of work hard and force your way into Leo Cohen's thoughts?
I wasn't sure what was going to happen with him, but I think I was talking to you before that, but obviously getting that game time has been brilliant for me, but I've literally just been trying to work as hard as I can possible to become the best player, and you know, still have a lot of things to work on, but I'm really enjoying my rugby at the moment.
Sure, and the internationals coming up, I mean, is that at the back of your mind at all, the fact that they are coming up and you have been getting prolonged game time for Leinster?
Yeah, so it's definitely, you know, a goal, I think, for everyone who's been kind of in and out of camp a bit, but, you know, I have to do my kind of talking on the pitch, if you know, just play by actions, and hopefully if that's good enough, it's good enough, but if not, keep working hard and see how things go.
You mentioned last season and the struggles you had last year in Europe. Obviously, a win this weekend will put you in a great position going into the international break. So, something to certainly look forward to, I suppose, this weekend.
Yeah, definitely. It wasn't our standard last year. We all know that. And it let us down. So, obviously, we put a massive focus on the first game. Now that that's done, the second game is even bigger, especially away from home. So, it's a massive challenge and one that everyone's looking forward to.
It's been a difficult week for everybody associated with Munster and Ireland rugby. Well, the Munster director of rugby, Razi Erasmus, and team captain Peter O'Mahony fronted a media conference here in Limerick on Wednesday.
On behalf of the squad, I would like to offer our sincere condolences to the Foley and Hogan families, in particular Olive, the two boys Tony and Dan, Axel's parents Brenda and Sheila, his sisters Ola and Rosie. Our thoughts continue to be with them, Axel's extended family and the close circle of friends at this time. Although an Irish and Munster rugby hero and a great friend of ours, this time it's about a husband, a father, a son and a brother, and a fallen friend. Let us not forget that. From a Munster rugby point of view, we wish to acknowledge and thank those that have expressed their sympathies and thoughts with us during this time, and thank everyone for their thoughtful considerations. It has been quite overwhelming, and is a testament to Axel himself that we are hearing from all corners of the world, across all sports and all walks of life. The great man touched so many hearts. Once life is greater than any other sport and sporting occasion, however, Thurman Park held a very special place in Axel's heart. And as difficult as it will be to play the next game, no matter the time, the opposition or the venue, we now have the opportunity to play there this Saturday. That is something that's hugely important to all of us. Playing at Thurman Park further ties us to his memory, and will be a chance for all of us, including the supporters and the community, to feel the connection and closeness to him at this time.
Razi, can you try and put in towards how difficult the last number of days have been?
It's been difficult, I think for everybody, but the way we handle it, you know, and personally for us, is so inferior to the way it must be for the family and his loved ones and everybody that's really, really close to him. So for us, you know, we're finding it tough, but, you know, there's people that's very close to him that we must think in these times.
What are the qualities that you learned about Anthony Foley in the time that you were dealing with him? What kind of a person was he?
You know, a good friend. First of all, a good friend. You know, if you get to know him and you go through tough times, and I know there's a lot of people that know him much longer than me personally, but, you know, a friend that wears hard on his sleeve, and you know exactly what his thoughts were. And he would walk there. You don't have to think about a lot of nonsense to say about him, because you know exactly where you stood with him, And it was somebody that really cared about every single friend of him. You know, he would do anything for his friend, so a very, very close friend.
I know that this week will all be about, you know, the family and paying tribute to Anthony. Is the game almost secondary? Is it immaterial at this stage?
You know, he would never, you know, talking to a lot of people who know him much longer than I am, and I think Peter will back me on this, and all his friends who know him closely will back me on this. You know, he would never want us to say that the game is second to him. That's just not the man he was. And but it will be. It's all about Anthony now and this weekend. And, you know, it will be for a long time raw, so it will be about Anthony.
My first game that he coached me with Munster, his first coaching game was the Munster under-20s game in Thomond Park, and we won it 3-0, ironically enough. And that suited Axe as good as if we had beaten him by 60 or 70 points. You know, he was a man who wanted any Munster jersey to win at any cost. And I'm not going to do him justice here. All the words I could say, to be honest. The knowledge that he could give to me, at times it was frustrating for him because he was such a good footballer, and he found it hard to at times to understand why we couldn't see what he could see, and that was probably how we frustrated him most, and that's how lucky he was to be blessed with such a rugby brain and a rugby mind, and you could never learn the amount that we've now lost that he's gone is incredible. The rugby knowledge and the brain and the man and the friend and the coach and the brother that we've lost, it's mad.
Listen, as I said, it's difficult and everybody knows it's difficult, but I know the players have so much respect for him that they're trying to get on with it and trying to do the job, you know, the way we think and know Anthony would wants us to go on with it. And I think that's what drives us and makes us committed to get a proper performance out there, because that's the way we're trying to handle that, you know, knowing that's the way Axel, with all respect, would have wanted us to do it. And I think that's what drives us. I think that would be fantastic for the people to come and do it for Axel, as the players are going to do it for Axel, you know. And actually the way we're doing it is more important than anything else. Because we know exactly the way Axel wanted us to do things, you know, it wasn't a grey area for us, you know, and it would be fantastic if the people, which has been unbelievable up until now, it's crazy the support out there, so and it would be great if they'll be there on Saturday.
I suppose really from a rugby point of view, the events in Paris Saturday night, Sunday morning overshadowed everything to do with rugby, not just here in Ireland, in Europe, indeed, probably throughout the course of the world. With the sudden death of the Munster head coach Anthony Foley, and that's been documented throughout the course of this week. The rugby correspondent of the Telegraph newspaper, Mick Cleary, is alongside me here, and we've just stepped out of a press conference, Mick, with Razi Erasmus and Peter O'Mahony, and I almost felt like a fraud inside there, as if I was stepping on top of somebody's grief, and it was right to be there, but it didn't feel right, if you know what I mean.
Well, Michael, yes, I mean, I've been coming here nigh on 20 years, I guess, and I've had some incredibly passionate, emotional nights and occasions at Thomond Park and in Limerick itself, but that outstripped them all in the sense of the rawness of a feeling that was there, and you're absolutely right, it did feel as if you're intruding on somebody else's grief, but actually, in reality, of course, the whole point of Munster rugby is that it is very much connected to the community, he's very much part of it, and Axel was very much a man of that upbringing and that ilk as well. So it's only right that kind of emotion is shared and obviously channeled through the media into the thousands and thousands of people who are watching from nearby and from afar.
There is no real surprise, is there, that this grief will be shared, or there is no real surprise at the outpouring of grief for Anthony Foley?
No, and I think it's the suddenness of it. Obviously, his relative youthful age at 42 as well, and I think it's also that kind of strange connection with sport. You know, it's a contrived world that we all enjoy and live in and wonder at, and sometimes it makes us sad and sometimes it uplifts it. And somehow you think that sport would be kind of immune from such things, and that Sunday morning would pass us the Sunday morning would before a match. There'd be a team meeting, a few line-out drills in a car park and a few butterflies starting in the stomach and all that kind of thing, that the dreaded old Grim Reaper couldn't be allowed to intrude on all that. And of course he did, and horribly, tragically and tellingly so. And that's, I think, what makes it such a shock. Obviously, dying at that age is always a shock, and there are many, many people that sadly will feel that. But I think this one is just seems sort of very, very different, because it's so unexpected, and we kind of think it shouldn't happen, but of course it has.
And it's a huge challenge, isn't it, for Razzy Rasmus and the rest of the players and the support staff to come to terms with that grief, you know, because as you said, it is very, very raw.
I guess, and it's why you and I both came out of there thinking, crikey, that was terribly wrought situation and whatever else. It might possibly, who knows anything in these sort of situations, it might possibly be easier actually just playing rugby, because that's something that they do so often and so willingly and so familiarly, really. Actually talking about it might be the difficult thing, and that's what they're having to do at the moment to us and therefore the public, but also a little bit amongst themselves, and that just winds up. And obviously the next couple of days are going to be very, very difficult with the body coming home and the funeral on Friday. Actually, the match itself, in a curious way, might be the easiest part of it. It might be a little bit cathartic. I just think it'll take a long, long, long time for even these players to come to terms with it, let alone a family. But I think at least Saturday, will be an occasion of such an emotional occasion. But I think once the first whistle goes, I think, you know, the natural instincts will take over.
As I said, you know, news of his sudden death has reached all parts. I'm aware that during the course of your job you were in Leicester during the week, and there's always been a massively strong bond between Leicester Rugby Club and Munster Rugby Club.
There is, dare I say it, at a time like this, it's Leicester took the Toman Park record. I was there that night as well. So, no, they've had many, many, many encounters, and it's and in many ways they're sort of similar institutions. You know, rugby is very much at the heart of the city in Leicester, never mind that the football club are now known worldwide, having won the Premier League title. I mean, rugby has always, and in fact for a while, had top billing in that city, you know, so it's very much part of that. And I was chatting to Richard Cockrell yesterday, who's a man of a Munster heart in a way. He's kind of fiery and abrasive and passionate, and he spoke very movingly about chatting with Axel after last year's kind of game in the corridor outside the change rooms. And Axel was talking about how, you know, he feels the responsibility of helping Munster get results, and they were struggling a little bit, and he felt more responsible because he was a player here and everything else. And Richard looked at him and said, tell me about it, because he's suffered the same thing. And was talking yesterday about how Leicester's reputation had been damaged by a real shellacking by Glasgow on a Friday night. So these guys really do suffer in a way. They're paid well for their trade, but they suffer for it as well, and they wouldn't be the guys that they are otherwise, would they, if they didn't really feel it in every kind of moment of every waking day.
So round two of European Rugby Champions Cup is this weekend. You know, people throughout the course of Europe will approach their games, I'm sure, with heavy hearts, quite a lot of them. You know, we know about what's ahead of Munster at Thomond Park on Saturday. It's important for Munster, it's important for the competition, in terms of helping people with their grieving process, that the players try and get back to doing what they do best.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, to be horribly practical about it, to get a game played, you know, if you suddenly have two postponed games there, it really does clog up the rest of the year. And it's difficult. You've got to, you know, you've got to get back out there at some point. And even if you... And it'd be incredibly understandable if the game had been postponed, you know. But then you'd face the same thing the week after. And as Razzy Rasmus said in there, that, you know, you may not get this chance to be at Toman Park at this particular moment in this horrible span of time that it is, you know. So it's take that opportunity, you know, because it may not be there in 2 or 3 weeks' time or whatever, you know. So that's right. And in, again, in terms of the, you know, it'll be a difficult game for for Munster in all senses, and we've spoken about the emotions of it. I mean, just technically it will, because Glasgow Warriors were terrific against Leicester on Friday night. They absolutely ripped them apart, you know, a bonus point victory. So that's the sort of measure of Gregor Townsend's side that's coming here, albeit it'll also be a difficult fixture for them to contemplate.
I know last weekend you were in Sandy Park, you saw Exeter against Claremont. Yeah. Claremont, the team that always threatened to win, and they... We all get our hopes up that this might be Claremont's year.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know...
Every year.
And for them, I think the two losing finals in the last four, I think, you know, in Europe, it took them 10 goes to win the French Championship. I think with the 10 finals, lost a lot before they nailed it under Vern Cotter and Joe Schmidt, in fact. But, yeah, they were terribly impressive. They were as impressive as Exeter were unimpressive, which Rob Baxter, their head coach, readily admitted afterwards. But having seen, I wasn't there, but I watched Toulon Saracens the day before. That really was a very special Saracens performance. We all know them to be this great, resilient side, absolutely on point in terms of what they do and how they do it in whatever part of the field. But actually, their attacking play in the first half against Toulon, when they just streaked ahead, was reminiscent of the All Blacks at their best. You know, there was fantastic interplay between forwards and back. So, yeah, those two teams stood out from the weekend, Saracens on Saturday and Claremont on Sunday.
And in terms of this weekend, I know you've got yourself organised a wonderful weekend in France. You'll have to suffer Cast against Northampton.
Yeah, I think the first time I went to Castres, I thought, well, that's lovely, south of France. In fact, it's the coldest place I've ever been to, underneath the Black Mountain, I think it is, or whatever else. But Castres, Northampton, yeah, Northampton just had a big arm wrestle against Montpellier, who are hosting Leinster this weekend, the biggest pack I've ever seen in my life as well. So, yes, Northampton have had a fitful season, but I'm looking forward especially to the game on Sunday afternoon, Toulouse-Wasp, Toulouse are not the side they were, you know, the side we all know, the side that won four titles, I think it is, and whatever, you know. And Wasps are showing signs of actually playing the sort of rugby that we used to associate with Toulouse. So it'd be very interesting to see if they can translate that into a way performance in Toulouse.
Of course, they're in Connacht's group. I mean, Connacht beating Toulouse at home last week, away to Zebre. You'd fancy them to win that second game and set it up for those back-to-back games against Wasps.
Yeah, wonderful try they scored, wasn't it? The 80-metre try, that again, you know, it was the sort of thing we used to associate with French rugby before it discovered,
money and
bouncers clad in rugby gear, you know, basically bouncing their way around a rugby field, you know. So it's a great shame, that, really, but that's for another day, I guess. Yeah, but Connacht, well, fair play to them, you know, after a slightly stuttering start, didn't they, domestically, are coming through. And Wasps, Connacht, Wasps will be a good game, because Wasps, and listen, Wasps, you know, they still got Kirtley Beale, who's injured, hasn't played for them yet, coming over from Australia to come back in probably early December. He might be fit for that mid-rounds of the of Europe, I guess, and Willie LaRue, the South African fullback, to come in January. So they're only going to get stronger, you know, through this competition, I think. So that is a good group, and that will be great sort of back-to-back games against Connacht.
Most of those groups are all pretty good. I mean, I'm not sure if you've seen much of Leinster this year. They had a good win over Cast, beat Munster the week before. They won last week, 5 tries on the board. Looked as if they've a lot more in the tank. But to go to Montpellier, it's like taking on half of South Africa when you go down there.
It is, yeah, with the chief judge up in the, Jake White up in the coach's box. Yeah, it's I don't know, there's something slightly wrong about it all, I think. And that seems to be the view in France as well. They win, but they win in a South African way. And kind of, what's the point? You want to identify, and that's why it's very tricky in a kind of professional era. I know all that, because, you know, money shapes everything, you can buy an element of success and get on the way to success. And it's, I know the Irish provinces have struggled possibly in that transfer market, you know, up against the English and French clubs. I'm not quite sure, in fact, I've no idea how you equalise all that, really. And I don't think market forces will dominate. You have to have good practice yourself. And it, you know, without, at the risk of sounding a bit patronising, it would be great to see Munster, Leinster, Ulster and Connacht. I mean, you know, we talk about demise of Irish rugby. There's four provinces in there fighting, and fighting well, you know. So I don't think it's quite as forlorn a scene as would be. But as we hear in Munster and Limerick, and you know, there's been some great occasions down the years. You'd like to see them rekindle, reignite it. I think the competition needs it a bit. If it just becomes, you know, 8 teams from England and France combined in the quarterfinals last year. That's not good for the competition.
Before we finish our conversation, you were at Sandy Park last week. You saw Exeter against Claremont. Exeter are away to Ulster this week. I mean, Ravenhill is the Kingspan Stadium is a pretty difficult place to go and win a match.
Yeah, I think they're funny, Exeter. They've been such a great story over the last sort of 4 or 5 years, you know, and were runners-up to Saracens last year in the Premiership. But they've had a couple of injuries, but I think it's a bit more than that. It's a bit deeper. They need to sort of... as Rob Baxter said, telling me on Sunday evening, pretty disconsolate, but he said it's almost as if we're still living off last season, as if they expect this season to be the same as last season, and it's not. You know, they've got to scrap their way back into contention. As I said, they're struggling to do that. You know, the forwards aren't playing with the kind of real, you know, missing one or two players. Dave Ewers, the back row forward, is a big old ball carrying kind of guy. They're missing him, he's out injured, and the backs just aren't, you know. Henry Slade, who was a great sort of hope of English rugby for an inside centre sort of position, or, you know, his lovely touches and all that kind of stuff, he's gone, you know, he's slipped off form as well. So I'm sure there'll be a response to last Sunday's pretty pitiful performance at Sandy Park. I would favour Ulster to win that, yeah.
And they've got some really good young backs, actually, Ulster. Obviously, yes. We're speaking ahead of team selection, Les Kiss there. A lot of good players there, with Ruan Pienaar wearing number 9 as well, obviously.
Yeah. No, I think, as I said, I would expect them to win that. I think it was such a thumping on Sunday evening. You know, you've got to, Exeter have got to finish by going down to Claremont. You know, so for them to, you know, they've got to get something out of Saturday night or their toast, really, in that kind of group. And they realise that, and that may merit some, but they just haven't shown any form in the Premiership so far. They're all right in terms of position, but they haven't played well, and they acknowledge that and admit it.
Listen, we're going to finish our conversation there. It's rather apt that we're doing it outside the UL Sports Arena, as you said. I mean, this is the place you've been coming to, me as well, for donkey's years. It's a sad time for everybody associated with Munster Rugby, but I think that's one of the great things about rugby. It just brings so many people together from everywhere, and we've seen that, and we'll see it, and we'll continue to see it, you know, albeit in sad circumstances at the moment.
Very sad circumstances, as I said, and you know, the next few days are just going to be wretched, really, for everybody. I don't think there's, sometimes, you know, you have a funeral or a moment, and it does kind of galvanise people. I just think this is such a wrought situation, that the emotional toll on all those people is going to be terrible, really, and I just hope they can get back up in time for a Saturday lunchtime kick-off. But let's hope, and as they said, they're going to play in the spirit of Axel, and he'd be the first to just, you know, get on with it and get through it somehow and pull together and all those kind of things. And you know, you can sound a bit trite at times like these, but that's all you've got to latch onto, I'm afraid, is that sort of solidarity and the community coming together as well. So and it's a good fixture, which is what I quite like about it. It's a proper game of rugby, and I think that'll get people through it. You know, it'll be battle of wits as well as of might and main up front and all those kind of things. So I think by the end of it, you know, it will have served its purpose in all senses, sport as well as everything else.
That was the rugby correspondent of the Telegraph, Mick Cleary. Well, for the first time ever, the Ireland women's team played 3 autumn internationals as they build up to the Six Nations Championship and next year's Rugby World Cup. World champions England, Canada and New Zealand visit Dublin in November to take on Tom Tierney's side. Back row Paula Fitzpatrick spent some time in France last season playing with Toulouse, but is now back in Ireland ahead of a challenging season. From Toulouse to Templeville Road, has the French adventure finished?
It's amazingly glamorous here, isn't it?
It's unbelievable.
Yes, the French adventure is over for the moment. Yeah, very glad to be back in my home club, but absolutely missing a lot of things about France as well. So missing the girls and the lifestyle over there and the weather, obviously. But yeah, great to be home as well.
What sort of a challenge was it when you were out there playing and training on a kind of probably more frequent basis than you do here? I'm not saying you're lazy.
There were a number of different challenges, I suppose. So in terms of the lifestyle, there was obviously the language barrier. I went over there with less than no French, having done German in school, so I had a bit of catching up to do. But then in terms of rugby, yeah, there was a lot of pitch sessions and a lot of things to adapt to in terms of the style of play as well over in France.
And I know from talking to people like Bernard Jackman and fellows like that, they said to me that there are kind of organised French classes. Is it the same for, was it the same for you, or did you drive around with a sort of CD in the car trying to memorise what was being said?
Yeah, it was more the latter, to be honest. Yeah, there was talk of organised French classes with the men's club as well, but that never happened, unfortunately. But yeah, we were kind of to drive it ourselves, and so I had kind of French verbs written up on the walls and stuff like that, and just using apps like Duolingo and things like that, like just to learn any bit I could. But mostly, to be honest, it was talking to the girls in the team. That was where I got most of it from.
And tell me, is there much of a culture switch to come back to Ireland from what you were doing?
Well, it's really cold here. But yeah, I suppose it's very, I notice a huge difference now in terms of communication on the pitch and things like that, whereas I would have noticed that as being a big barrier over in France, particularly in the initial period. Towards the end, I was able to speak with referees and everything, and that's when I knew things were getting better. But yeah, obviously you can have more of an impact here in terms of game plan and things like that when the language isn't an issue.
And in terms of even the way the last 12 months have gone for the women's game, I mean, there's, you know, obviously, you know, people involved with sevens. There were people who played with Ireland last year for the very first time. I know the aim is to get as broad a playing population as possible.
Yeah, and I think that's part of the reason for the November internationals as well, is to blood players at that level, so they're full test matches, and to give the newer players, as you say, that either are transferring over from sevens or that are new into the system completely, to give those girls game time and get up to match speed for I suppose the ultimate goal is next August.
And when you look at the opponents who are picked, I mean, it's not exactly as if they're kind of straightforward enough.
No, absolutely not. Yeah, it's fantastic, to be honest. The opportunity to play three of the best nations in the world, it's going to be fantastic for us to pit ourselves against those guys, so really, really looking forward to it.
And in terms of preparation and getting ready for Rugby World Cup next year, I mean, it's ideal, isn't it, you know, given the fact that you've a match 3 weeks on the trot.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's hopefully going to simulate that kind of World Cup environment where we have kind of 4 or 5 days between games. You have that kind of quick turnover, so you've got to not only look at who's going to be kind of your best 15, but you've also got to look at the squad. You're never going to win a World Cup with a group of 15 players. It's going to be a squad effort, so it'll be looking at the recovery in between games as well, and seeing how we can manage ourselves as individuals and as a group then as well, in terms of the turnover between games, both in terms of physically and then also strategy and things like that too.
I would imagine there's a huge difference this year, is there? Has preparation completely different given the fact that there's a Rugby World Cup next August?
I wouldn't say it's completely different. I mean, we've always had that kind of professionalism about us, we'd like to think, but there definitely is a focus, I suppose. So everybody knows the timeline that we have. There's a big emphasis on the timeline that we have and the targets that we have up to that. So we have November, then we'll obviously have our Six Nations, and then it'll be a build-up to the World Cup. So, yeah, there's definitely a focus there.
Quite a lot of people involved in the last Rugby World Cup, but you know, that was in France. This one is kind of in your backyard almost.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's a fantastic opportunity for us. I think everyone is really excited about it. Playing in front of a home crowd, it should be a huge advantage for us. So it should be great.
And the fact that the games are, you know, they're in UCD, I mean, there's a kind of one central base certainly for November, and quite a few of the matches obviously for the World Cup will be there as well.
Yeah, definitely. So November, we should hopefully get used to, we're playing in the Bowl in UCD for the three games, so we should be able to familiarise ourselves with it. But a lot of the girls, to be honest, any of the Leinster-based girls would have trained a lot in UCD already, so we'd be some of the girls go to college there, so we'd be very familiar with it. But yeah, no, it should be great to have that base there. It worked quite well in Marcoussi in the World Cup in France, that there was a central kind of place for all the pool matches. It meant that it kind of helped with crowds and things like that, and also the atmosphere around the whole tournament. And then obviously playing in Kingspan, it's a fantastic stadium, so that'll be a great opportunity too.
Now, without going into sort of a 7-day-week scenario, but in terms of time commitment and training, I know you've got a job to hold down as well, but in terms of training, I mean, what's involved?
Yeah, we'd have group sessions depending on your base. So the provinces would all have, and say there's Cork and Limerick and Munster, then there's Connacht, Ulster, and then Leinster as well. So we'd all have our base. We'd train in the morning. We've either two or three gym sessions a week, depending, and then we'd have a conditioning session, a skills session, and then all our club sessions and club games as well. So there'd be a good few sessions a week, yeah.
And in terms of the playing base from a women's league point of view, I mean, have you noticed, you know, since the game has taken off in the country in the last couple of years, have you noticed a sort of a growth, maybe is the long-winded phrase of saying it, in terms of numbers, are people coming up to training and that?
Yeah, definitely. There's definitely a growth in the uptake. I think it'll take a few years for those players to come through to AIL level. But yeah, it's definitely improving all the time. And I think the last World Cup, the Men's World Cup, all are feeding into kind of a new kind of appreciation for women's rugby, and maybe the idea that it is possible for maybe women who wouldn't have seen women's rugby played before on TV, with more and more TV coverage, coverage online, things like that, people are seeing, it's actually the same as the men's, it's full contact, that kind of thing, and more women are starting to get involved.
And know that everybody who's involved, you know, from a management point of view, from a playing point of view, to wear the green jersey of your country is something that's just an incredible honour.
Oh yeah, absolutely. That's the highest, isn't it? I mean, that's the pinnacle. So, and every opportunity you get to do that is an amazing one. So you have to really appreciate it. None of us know how long we'll get to play, whether it's for your club, whether it's for your province, whether it's for your country. So you have to appreciate it every time you do. So
I don't want to throw you here, but when you look at a former player like Rosie Foley and what she did and what she brought to the women's game before it became even popular, and you've seen what's happened with that family and the circumstance they find themselves this week, I mean, that's heartbreaking, isn't it?
Yeah, it's absolutely tragic news. I heard about it myself as we walked off the pitch from our club game on Sunday, and everyone was just in shock, kind of not speaking, just shocked by the news. What an amazing player, what an amazing contributor to rugby in the country. So yeah, absolutely, thoughts are with Rosie and all the family and friends.
Paula Fitzpatrick there. The Ireland women's team play England on Sunday, November 13th. It's Canada on Saturday, November the 19th, and New Zealand on Sunday, November the 27th. A reminder, this week's European action on RTE Radio 1 sees Munster take on Glasgow on Saturday at 1 o'clock, and on Sunday it's Zebre against Connacht at 3:15. That's it from The Breakdown. From myself, Michael Corcoran, and producer Andrew O'Connor, thanks for listening.